Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the Minorities in Publishing podcast. This is Jen. For new and returning listeners, you may know you can find the podcast on Tumblr at minoritiesinpublishing.tumblr.com or on Twitter at minoritiesinpub, and you can sign up for the newsletter at the pinned tweet at the top of the Twitter page. And the podcast is also on Spotify, TuneIn, iHeartRadio, iTunes, and there's always one I forget, and I'm forgetting it right now. But I'll probably remember by the end of the episode, or if not, I'm a liar. That's fine. So I am really, really happy to be talking to Dawn Quigley, who is the author of Apple in the Middle, which came out this summer, was it? Summer 2018?
Yes, in August. Yep.
Yeah, so we both had August pub dates. It's been a wild few months, friends, for Dawn and me.
I agree.
And I am so excited about Apple in the Middle. It is here in the world for you to purchase, and you should purchase it big time, I think. Because I love Apple's voice. Apple's voice, that's what I just remember is the humor, and I feel like we don't get humor a lot. Maybe in Kid Lit there's a little bit more. I do read a lot of Kid Lit, but I just feel like sometimes we're so serious all the time.
Yes.
And it was just so heartening to have someone who is dealing with serious issues, but also has a certain levity in the way they look at the world.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, first of all, Jen, I am so honored to be here on your podcast and to actually like talk with you in person. We've exchanged a lot of emails, but as we know, it's always nice to touch base with like an actual human person.
It really is, especially even if it's via Google Hangouts, which is what we're doing.
It's
still nice to interact.
Yeah, I'm really excited. It's like you said, in August, it seemed like it was never going to get here for the release of my Apple in the Middle by Northrop State University Press. But once it came out, I think every new author, when you get this book, this fabulous box of your author copies of your book, it's not an out-of-body experience, but it's just, it was really overwhelming. And that's sort of how I think my journey started with Apple, is that to physically touch the story that's been walking around in your mind for years. It was just amazing and very humbling. And I recorded myself, and it was like, I felt like I was a child at a birthday party.
And this isn't necessarily your first written piece.
No.
You've been writing for a while.
Yeah. It was really interesting. So I was a teacher for 18 years in K-12 before I moved up to be a professor at St. Catherine University in the education department. But as a teacher, I had this fabulous, loud, booming voice that I could sort of quiet everybody down. You know, our bodies kind of maybe give out or they change a little bit. And so I started having issues with my vocal cords, and maybe sometimes you'll hear every once in a while, I'll sort of lose my voice. And it was really bothersome, but, you know, I look back and it was a blessing because it really made me become a quieter person. And in that quieter person, I really turned to writing as a way to amplify my voice. And so, you know, I began with some letters to the editors, sort of essays and commentaries and things like that. And it was just amazing that I could still share my ideas, but through silence, through the written word. And so that's really been comforting to me.
That's so amazing to hear, because I feel like writing is a unifier for a lot of us. For some people, it is kind of an outlet, but I think for some of us, it really is a unifier, especially those of us in marginalized communities, of trying to say what we can't articulate in a verbal way because of whatever reasons, but also in a way of being able to be present, but not necessarily maybe be physically there, but know that you're being able to vocalize something that's very important to you. And I think that also comes through in Apple in the Middle.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you so much, Jen. You know, just a quick introduction to myself. Like I said, Dawn Quigley, and I'm an enrolled member of the Turtle Mountain Band of Ojibwe, which is in North Dakota. It's just a few miles from the Canadian border. But I absolutely agree with you, where writing, it's also a safe place for Indigenous, Black people of color, because I think we've all been in situations, whether you're up in front of people or having a conversation with somebody, and you don't get to finish your thoughts, or you are so shocked at what people are saying that you don't answer. And it's a way to have an uninterrupted platform when you're writing. People have to listen to you. Mm-hmm. And if they choose to listen to you, it's even better. And I think that's with Apple. Like I said, I taught for 18 years. And I was also director of our Indian education program, my district. And so I was really interested, I'm especially interested in literacy for those middle school, those junior high students where they're really too old to read elementary stories, but they might not be ready for the upper YA content. And I taught with the majority, seventh and eighth grade, and I think my mind just stuck there. But working with native students, I realized that there really wasn't a lot of books about contemporary Native life. And you know, that junior high life, you're just sort of odd and quirky. That's why I fit in so well in that age group. But that's really where the voice for Apple came, where she doesn't quite have a filter and everything just kind of erupts out of her mouth when she really should not be saying certain things. Tries to navigate her identity.
So just to give kind of a summary of Apple in the middle, so Apple is it fair to say mixed race?
Yes.
Teen or preteen, and she is going to visit her native family, who she has not had any contact with really, because her mom died when she was born, unfortunately. Her mom is native and her father is white. And so it seems like it's her awakening, which ultimately becomes the reader's awakening. And that was a question I had for you, was why that viewpoint? Two, in particular, did it kind of, I don't want to say easy, as in, oh, this is an easy way to kind of filter into showing Native life, but did it kind of help to have a clear pathway? Because it's not necessarily as in, oh, we go from A to B. There's a journey for Apple to get there. And did it make it a much clearer story in your mind to know that this journey was her getting to know her Native identity?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, I have a few different aspects about sort of the way I structured the writing. You know, the first one was, like I said, I was really immersed in working with Native students, and there were so many of them. There's so many of us. Maybe we don't have a strong connection to one side of the family for various reasons. Maybe we were adopted, maybe we're in foster care. And so there's this aspect that in the book, the question was, can you be a Native person without even understanding what it means to be Indian? And so, like I said, that I really saw a lot of my students sort of grapple with that. And then also, one of the things that I started writing this book, I never consider myself an author of a book. Maybe, articles, yes, essays, yes, poetry, yes. But my girls, we have two girls, and they were younger, and I just kept hearing, not an audible voice, but I just kept hearing something in my mind say, tell them the stories. And I kept over and over again, tell them the stories. And I instantly knew it was about, I thought it was, oh, tell my girls, write down stories about when I was growing up, when we would go the summers to visit my Native family up in the Turtle Mountains. And so I just began writing the stories. And, it's funny, I did not have an outline. I didn't know what was going to happen. I literally wrote 2 pages a day. And sometimes those 2 pages were so painful. Like, they took forever. And I never knew what was going to happen. But what I did realize is for them was, I started realizing later on that, maybe the story isn't just for my girls. Maybe it's just for other people, whether it's like the students I had who are trying to navigate what it means to be Native, or even just a lot of teens who are maybe mixed race. Maybe they speak a different language at home and English at school, or just those, all of us that are in between. And I won't say in between two lives or two spots. I think there's multiple places all around there. But I also am a teacher, right? My poor girls are just, they always say, oh my gosh, Mom, please, not another life lecture. But writing this story was a way for me to say, this is my understanding of what it means to be a contemporary Native person, a teen. And navigating, there's not always eagles that fly overhead or flute music that plays in the background. We go to Target. We do all these other things. We have cell phones. And so, long story short, it was it was really a journey just to share a really positive aspect of a Native teen.
Having her just be very open to the experience, but she's also pretty critical, Apple.
Yeah.
Because, you know, this is also class we're talking about. So when she comes by and sees the trailer, she's like, this isn't good.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, it's interesting. There's some of my Native Studies teacher friends or professors around the country that are they're teaching contemporary Native Lit. And so they were reading Apple. And I would Skype in, which is really fun to Skype in, to classrooms. But one of the questions that I would get is, why is Apple come from a higher socioeconomic status? You know, it was really interesting. I said, well, because I wanted to show representation. I grew up middle class. My father was a pharmacist. And so that was the story that I wanted to tell, that there's, you know, there's not one way to be a Native person. I always say that, but it really is true. And so, yeah, so she's kind of a snob when she goes there. And I purposely, you know, started with her talking about the color of the house or the trailer. And she said it was pink. And then as she starts to really feel like that's a home and really where she belongs, the color description starts shifting into magenta and rose color and really just transforms into this beautiful color as she sort of sheds her critical aspect of what should a house look like.
I admit that I have some privilege, and I actually came from a lower socioeconomic background growing up. And sometimes it's the ascendancy, right? I've moved from this to that, and therefore I am not going back to that. And she wouldn't know because she did. Her father's a doctor, and her parents met, and he's been doing pretty well. He's back on the straight and narrow, so to speak.
Yeah.
And so when she goes there, it's like these kind of homely things of, well, you don't need to have the new jeans and the heels. And the
yeah.
Because she's also a fashionista.
Yes. Yes. And, you know, I think it is really true. Like, and, you know, I'm one Native person from one Native family, from one, you know, extended family, from one tribe. And of course, we know there's over 570 tribes. And so when I speak, of course, it's just my one experience. But, you know, when I spend time with Native people, they could care less, you know, how much your watch costs, what kind of shoes you have, what kind of purse you have. The things that are valued, what I've come to understand, are who are you as a person? Are you, can you bring Native humor? So for example, you know, Native humor is not sarcastic, it's not harmful, but it's a way to bring light to the situation or to gently bring somebody back into the community. Instead of yelling at them, you might kind of tease them lovingly. Other things that are valued is just really extended family. In the book, the funny thing is somebody will say, oh, that's your cousin once removed, that's your second, third, fourth cousin. And it doesn't really matter how exactly the family tree looks, but it's just this love of family and of course eating together. And so I have recipes in the book because that's kind of what we do a lot. And just when you make these fry bread or gullet or bangs, it's just a way to physically be thinking about memories of your family and really carrying on that tradition. And so, you know, circling back to your question about, you know, the socioeconomic status, is that as teens are navigating their identity, is just to remind them that, you know what, it doesn't matter what kind of t-shirt you have or iPhone. It's really about your personality and how you develop into just a good human being.
Being a debut this year, how has that been in terms of discussing Apple and kind of seeing her embraced by other people who maybe this is the first book they've ever read with a Native character at the helm of it, or with any Native people in it at all?
You know, it's been really interesting because I have no idea how to be an author.
You know, well, it's like, interesting you said wouldn't say author when it came to this book.
Yeah. And like book tours and book readings, you know. So one of the great aspects is that the Native author community, you know, it might be small. And I'm talking either locally in the Twin Cities here in Minneapolis, St. Paul area where I live, or the Native Kidlit community. They have welcomed me with open arms and have been such incredible mentors. Cynthia Leidig Smith, Joe Bruschak, Tim Tingle, and then locally here, Marcy Rendon and Carmelin. They are there without judgment when I ask what seems like the dumbest questions. And so in that way, it's been really great. And then they've also, which I love as a way to kind of revive Native community, is that we do things in community, sort of linking arm in arm, is that I've been invited and invited other people to do book readings with me, these Native authors. And so, you know, I'm still learning. I really take the role of watching elders and just sort of watch how they are. And so it was wonderful. I was down at ALA in June, down in New Orleans, and just to be able to sit next to Cynthia Leidig Smith and Joe Bruschak and Debbie Reese, and just really watched and learned from them. I mean, I'm 48 years old, but I take seriously the role of Native elders. And so, yeah, being a debut has been wonderful, but also it's good to keep my feet on the ground and realize I've got one book, you know, just kind of keep working at it.
Being at ALA, I think that was the We Need Diverse Books panel, was it? It was
The
Native Voices We Need Diverse Books panel. And because Debbie is such a stalwart person who is doing so much for the community, and I've overcome a lot of my ignorance. I still am ignorant on a lot of things, but I've overcome a lot more because of the work she's been doing for years and years and years and years, and I value her greatly. I know so many people do. But when we talk about like these limitations, and I don't mean limitations by the authors or the creators, I mean limitations within the industry that's been established for, you know, those stories that are acquired by the industry. And this is the kind of story I feel like is not necessarily traumatic. You know, it's also not based in kind of folklore or mythology or fantasy. No shade to that. It is a book that I feel like we just don't get. And I'm constantly wondering why. Why don't we get these books? But so in finding your press, how did that work out?
One of the things, you're absolutely right. I really wanted to recognize that there's been historical trauma. There is chemical dependency issues. There are a lot of wounds and a lot of scars in the Native community, and those stories need to be told. And people have done a beautiful job with that. But, you know, I'm always, like I said, about reaching that that young adult, whether they're Native or not, where they're just trying to figure out their identity. And, you know, just putting this humor in there and this quirky humor. But in saying that, I think it's really interesting that when you look at the majority of Native American authors, they usually find a home in a small press. And so that was the same with, like, I did submit it to the contest. I think it was
The Penguin Random
The Walter Dean Myers. Was that right?
Okay.
Because I thought that was when the We Need Diverse Books really started kind of coming out, and Owen Voices. And I just thought, wow, I think this might be a place for Apple. And I really got a lot of interest, but I submitted it to North Dakota State University Press, and they just started a series called Contemporary Voices of Indigenous People. And I thought, oh, wow, that's my book. It's contemporary. And I think it's a little nicer because they've never done a young adult book before. And, you know, the editor, Suzanne Gehelly, has just been amazing. And she is so open to, because she's not Native, but she was really open to certain editorial things that I thought were really important. So, for example, there are the Turtle Mountain language. They speak Ojibwe up there, but they also speak Mi'kmaq. And so it's a mixture of Ojibwe, Cree, and French. And so I was really strongly felt that I did not want the indigenous, the Mi'kmaq words italicized, because usually that means that it's like a foreign word. You know, indigenous language are not foreign. This is the language that our land actually recognizes. And so I specifically did not italicize the English, but that's another story. But But when the first galley came back, it was all, the italics were, I think, put back into the indigenous language. And I said, oh, and I, you know, very respectfully, we changed that back, and here's why. My editor was so interested and so open to understanding that what it seems like is maybe just a grammatical issue, and it's so much more than that. And so, you know what, working with a small press like that, a university press, I could email her right away. I could pick up the phone call, and there was that human connection where I'm really glad that I didn't have to navigate through a lot of different real staff for this first book.
That's so funny, because I also had to deal with that for the anthology I edited, and that's a big five press. It's all POC voices, and it was just like, yeah, you're not going to italicize anything in, like, Pidgin. You know, like, you're just not italicizing the stuff. No. And, you know, at that point, it's just kind of like, do what she wants, because she's angry. But I also am a typesetter, so I was like, this is not okay. So this is just so inherent, and what you say makes so much sense, because even more so, these native languages are indigenous to here, so we need to recognize them. And it's like this default of like, oh, it's not American English, and it's like, well, let me tell you something.
I very, you know, I might be able to speak like as much Ojibwe or Michip as a 2-day-old baby, right? I mean, it's really challenging for me. But I did hear this beautiful thing, is that a lot of times Indigenous Native people move away from their land that they grew up on, but yet when they come back to visit, if they speak English, the land will not recognize them. But if they even just say a brief bonjour, I mean, hello in their indigenous language, the land welcomes and recognizes them. And I just thought that was really important about the aspect of connecting land to language and to Native people. Mm-hmm. And that was a big aspect of my book as well. It's almost like the land was a character.
Yeah, it really was. And that was very necessary, because as Apple's going through her own journey, she is getting used to the land. And that's also when, you know, you look at the factors of, okay, I am not dressed properly to go on these ventures that we're going to. I am not sure how to navigate this store. I am not sure, you know. How to greet people, or how to say thank you and give these gifts, and like what the gifts are for. You know, these are just inherent to, oh, you respect the space, you respect the people in the space. And I felt like those details, as Apple's learning them, I am only privy to this conversation. I don't claim to be part of it. There's also something in, you know, the Black culture of like, you don't kind of talk about what is said in the house, right? So are you revealing too much, so to speak? And at any point, was that something that also kind of factored in Apple's journey, learning more, and she's asking questions of, okay, am I revealing a bit too much about this specific portion of Native American culture?
And this is actually a really important topic about how much do you share? And I know that it's similar to any culture, but I know for the Native culture, going back to Debbie Reese, you know, she does speak, and you'll have to forgive me, I'm not sure if she quoted this or if she came up with it, this notion about when we're reading books, diverse books, we want to offer windows, mirrors, and sliding glass doors into different images of culture. However, there are aspects, so for example, maybe a ceremony or a spiritual sharing from an elder interpreting your dream. There is an aspect where you put a curtain down to not allow people in. And one of the things that I did put some dream interpretations in Apple, but these were actually a few of my own dreams, and just sort of navigating myself about what does this mean. But a lot of times dreams can just be crazy stories, but I take dreams really seriously.
That makes sense. That makes sense, like the intricacies, so to speak. So you're also, as you said, you've taught for K-12, but you're also a professor.
I am. I'm an assistant professor at a small liberal arts college or university in St. Paul, Minnesota. And you know, I loved teaching. I loved my students in K-12, you know, middle school. And that's the majority where I taught. But what I started realizing is that I started paying attention my last few years to the new teachers. And I would really try to mentor them. And I thought, there's something to this. There's something going on here maybe that I'm supposed to do. And so I was very fortunate to join the faculty and the education department. So I work in the teacher preparation program for people who want to become teachers. But also my passion, and I have a graduate course on this, is the majority of teachers are white in Minnesota, just like I think that's reflective around the country. But in Minnesota, there are also academic standards, which are guides to what teachers need to teach in math and science and social studies. But Minnesota in 2014 included aspects that have about Native American history, language, and culture that have to be included in the curriculum. I was so excited, Jen. I thought, yes, finally. But, you know, my dear non-Native teacher friends, they had no idea. They had no idea how to include this, and they were not taught the state's history, language, and culture of the indigenous people. And so what happens is they were afraid to make a mistake, they were afraid to offend, and so they don't include as much as they could. And so that's sort of my link to what I do in higher ed, is I really want to be able to show and filter and teach non-Native people how to evaluate and find Native, you know, really respectable Native curriculum. And so again, you know, Apple, I hope, is, you know, meeting that need as well.
That's so interesting. And I think that's also similar to the writing process for some people, not for all people. Some people are very audacious. I know that I've said I don't feel like I could personally include a primary Native character, because I am very, very ignorant the differences in the cultures of Native people. But that doesn't mean they need to be erased in the text. It just means I don't feel comfortable or confident in myself to be able to handle that well. But then what you do is you support and you and you educate yourself, and you could still... It's so different in the teacher area. I feel like there's not really an excuse not to. Like, I get that, you know, excuse in this is why I don't have these characters in my books. However, I buy a crap ton of books by these authors and da 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 da. But in the education realm, it's so important and necessary. I mean, this is why we are where we are, sadly.
Yeah, exactly. Chris, you know, I'm not making, you know, I can't generalize all teachers, but Native people are 1-2% of the population, and then a lot of the history and education for Native people, we don't have enough Native teachers yet. I love the word yet. And I think that even goes back to the experience that Native or diverse people kids have in when they're going through school. If their schooling was atrocious and they never saw a reflection of their Native history, language, and culture in school, school might not be a safe place. And then why in the world would you want to take that up as a career? And so I think books, and also for non-Native people, I think books are the best way to learn about something. You know, I'm really starting to realize that so many times, and myself included, is if we meet somebody from a different culture or a different country or even different state, we put the learning on their back. We try to learn off their back instead of doing our own work. And I think it's just critical for teachers to understand where to find respectful. And I never say accurate, because I don't really know. You know, there's not one way to be a Native person. And so they need to do the work. They need to do the reading and the studying and the background information in order to become informed and to not just you expect to go to a, you know, 3-hour seminar and to learn, you know, everything Native 101.
Yeah. I love those kind of mandatory workshops of, and we're gonna get good today, y'all. We're gonna get woke. We're gonna get aware. I said, that's different from learning the new iOS.
Yeah.
Like, you may only need to do learn how to use your iPhone once, but you really do need to do it's consistent work.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, there's a lot of people that are just, maybe they're embarrassed about, they don't know what they don't know. And, you know, they can take a great book, like Do All Indians Live in Teepees by the Smithsonian, the Native American History Museum there, and they can just read a couple pages a day in the privacy of their own home. But they do need to do the work.
That's very true. That's incredibly true. So going back to you being in academia, there is such a difference in writing style. And this is not to say, you know, there are many people who are academics who write narratives. There are people, doctors, lawyers, you know, some of the like biggest names, you know, John Grisham, isn't he a lawyer or was he a lawyer?
Yeah.
Was a lawyer. He's making way more money writing books than using that JD or whatever.
Exactly.
But it is so different. There is such a technical element to the academic writing. And then when you come to kind of more creative narrative, and I mean, it is, I feel like they're both creative in their way. I just think it's more like this kind of defined method of writing is looked at as not creative. But I kind of look at all kind of writing as creative in its own way. How do you kind of operate in both worlds? Because you still do academic writing, do you?
Yeah, and so one of the aspects about being in a higher ed is you are expected to present at conferences, but then also to do academic writing and get published. One of the things is that there have been Indian academics who have really laid the groundwork before me. And so I was able to step in, use a lot of their reasoning for certain ways to write, mm-hmm. and to be able to cite them, because we know in a higher ed, we have to always give a citation to why I'm doing a certain things. And so, for example, I just finished my PhD this spring. And
congrats.
You have to write, I had to write a dissertation, which is usually a lot of academic, blah, blah, blah. But one of the things I really fell in love with is something called Indigenous Research Methodology. And so, you know, usually when we think about research projects, we see statistics and graphs and very dry writing, which, you know, it has to be done. That's how new ideas come. But I was able to use story as a method. And so what I did is I studied non-Native teachers and how they took up and learned and navigated how to implement Native American curriculum into their classrooms. And so I was able to collect data, interviews, and things like that. And I was able to weave a story using Indigenous research methodology. And so I told the story of the area. I live in Minnesota. And so I told the story basically through as if we were navigating on water, mm-hmm. and we were coming entangled with certain aspects of the lake. It, like I said, I was able to stay true to story, but infusing it with citations and a little more academic writing. And then of course you have to be really open. Higher ed is a little more open, but there are some advisors or maybe some professors or faculties who they don't consider that, quote unquote, academic enough.
But how do you, so then how do you switch gears when you do something like Apple? You know, I don't know if you, can you do two types of writing a day? Because you were saying you did 2 pages of Apple a day, even if it was painful. Do you kind of switch gears? Is it, okay, I'm going to work on this essay to sub for, you know, periodicals, and now let me work on Apple and switch to a preteen voice who is, you know, not happy in this environment because, yeah, you know, walking around in the mud is getting on her shoes.
I think I am. One of my faculty members was on my PhD committee. When I first started writing, you know, I'm sure it was fine, academic writing, but he read it and he looked up at me. He's, Dawn, this is not your base. I know you. And it was just that invitation that there's not one way to be an academic writer, but you do sort of have to be in a different mindset. But for example, I'm kind of working on a chapter for an academic book. I'm also working on a nonfiction picture book about Native American people. And I think I just, maybe a lot of writers, our minds just are everywhere. And I think I'm just kind of pinging back and forth. You know, I think about, oh my gosh, I have to pick up milk today. Oh, I think I'll put a citation in this paper. Oh, you know, this character would be great to say this. So luckily, my kind of frenetic mind, I find a way to make it work for me.
Yeah, my mind works that way too. And I don't know if it was way better before the internet became a thing and it was more available. Whereas before, I think I could multitask way better back in the 90s and early 2000s than I can. Or maybe just my attention span was longer. And now I'm doing similar. It's like, yes. I have a new idea for an essay. Oh, I know how to fix that chapter. Oh, I know. I think I want to add that line to that story. Oh, yeah. And I have to let my authors know that their proofs are ready. Oh, and I need eggs.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, one of the things is, for me, I really value silence. And so when I write, I have background music. I think that's one way where I'm able to just be in the moment of whatever I'm writing. Other people in my immediate family, they have to have background music on if they're doing homework. I think that's maybe one way that I'm able to turn off my brain a little.
So thank you so much, Dawn, for talking to me about process and all of this. And I, again, highly recommend Apple in the Middle. It is a gorgeous cover. Once you revealed that cover, I was like, clutching the metaphorical pearls. It's so gorgeous.
Thank you so much, Jen. I adore that cover. I love it.
Well, it's also, it has the pink space because it looks more like a house in the book, but it is the trailer.
Yeah, it does. And grandmother's house really was that color. Still is.
Yeah, yeah. So it's, you got the pink, and then, but you have Apple at the forefront, and she's wearing teal, which is my favorite color, and she has turquoise, and she has a beautiful locket. Her skin is glowing. It's just gorgeous. It's just thanks. Contemporary.
I think the artist, you know, I was saying, he's going to have beaded earrings. I mean, I love turquoise beaded earrings, and so it was really fun. And then I also really wanted Apple to be looking at the reader because that's the way that she speaks. Mm-hmm. Voice is speaking to the reader, and I wanted to be able to look out at everybody.
Yeah. Also, the features. She has these high cheekbones. Her nose isn't that, you know, that tiny, tiny, pointy, quote-unquote Nordic feature nose. Yeah, she has color to her. She has a specificity to her. It's not as though it felt as though, oh, okay, she made a Barbie doll, and then she just tanned her up.
And she colored it.
Yeah, basically. It's just like, it's, you know, because Barbie, these were my Barbies, and, you know, except for, like, I think I had an Asian one. It was her Hawaiian friend, and I forget what her name was, but basically the white and the black Barbies were pretty much synonymous, except for the hair and the skin tone and the eyes. So that's not the case here. So that's Apple in the Middle by Dawn Quigley from NDSU Press. And Dawn, can you tell people what your social media is so they can follow you, keep up with your events? Do you have more events coming up in the new year?
Oh, I'm working on some other writing projects, so I think I'll be putting it on Twitter. So I'd love it if people would follow me. You can either search Dawn Quigley, Quigley, or you can go right to Twitter at Dawn Quigley.
Yeah. And you have a website too, or no?
I do. If anybody wants to sort of look, I really model it after Denise's amazing website, but it's called Native Leader MN. And it's really a way, hopefully somebody else would like to model that and in their own state, but it's really focused on the Midwest for teachers to find, like I said, respectful Native curriculum sites and recommended books.
Ooh, great. Because I need to read more myself. So I'll be on that. I'll get on it for 2019 goals. Thank you so much again, Dawn, for talking with me all the way from Minnesota.
Great. Thank you so much, Jenna. Thank you for everything that you're doing to help, you know, weaving diverse books and to really amplify all the voices.
Oh, thank you for writing. Thank you for your voice. Appreciate it. So those who are listening, you can find the podcast again at minoritiesinpublishing.tumblr.com. Also on Twitter at minoritiesinpub. And we are on Spotify, iHeartRadio, TuneIn, Google Play, and iTunes. Remember that last one, Google Play. And this actually may be the last episode of the year for 2018. So if that is the case, I wish everyone a happy holiday and a wonderful new year. And we will be back with many more episodes in 2019. Thanks again, Dawn.